Good afternoon. It's 1 p.m. on November 24th, and you're listening to Talk on the Rock, KSTK's community show. This week's show is a special episode, and one that we recorded a bit early, so we're not taking call-ins. As a note, this interview has been edited to help with clarity and flow. This week's guest is newly appointed Grand President Emeritus of the Alaska Native Sisterhood, Ethel Lund. Ethel was born and raised in Wrangell and was instrumental in founding the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium and the Sea Alaska Corporation. So, I guess to start off, would you introduce yourself?
My name is Ethel Lund, Ethel Marie Lund. I have a Tlingit name of Anwungeek, which means the raven as he walked about where people lived. I was schooled in Wrangell from first grade to graduation from high school and enjoyed every minute of it. Things were so much different then. I lived in Wrangell until I graduated from high school, and I went south to attend a nursing school. I had worked in a hospital there, our old hospital, for all the summers I was out of school, which meant from May to September. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I was just a housekeeper then and spent a lot of time with the patients, who most of them I know. But my interest in medicine has not changed. After graduating, I worked for almost 2 years to earn money to go to school. I started in September 1952 and had to quit because what was sweeping the town at that time was tuberculosis of the chest. It affected just like the virus is affecting us today. Every state in the Union of Alaska and the states down south have been fighting this virus almost a year now. And we have some of the best trained doctors and physicists to develop a vaccine. So hopefully we'll overcome this handicap and be able to get back to a normal life again. In most of our towns, they're in quarantine. They can't leave their house. They have to stay in. They're encouraged to wear masks whenever you go outdoors and stay 6 feet apart, which is very hard to do when you're in a family. So there's a lot of history associated with the Wrangell people, the Native people, the non-Native people. They have an interesting story with their interaction with non-Natives. We're still working on that.
I'll be honest, I didn't know a lot about you until I got a press release from the Alaska Native Sisterhood about how you had been nominated Grand President Emeritus. First of all, congratulations on that. But second of all, I really appreciated they sent that out. I got to learn so much about you and all of your incredible accomplishments. You gave a bit of an overview about your life, growing up in Wrangell and leaving for nursing school, which I do want to return to, but would you maybe be willing to tell me first what becoming Grand President Emeritus means for you and for the Sisterhood?
I'd be happy to. Being the President Emeritus to me means a lot of dedicated work. And Emeritus is primarily the rock of strength. She's available to any local camp that has questions or that needs help hand in hand. she's available. She has to have hours spent with local camps and the willingness to participate in any of their programs from which she will learn from. Most of the camps ask about procedure, what can they do to increase and make more alive through the President Emeritus. She should be on her toes and ready to assist them. Now, when I was Grand President and also a local president, I spent much time on ANS history. It was special to me because my grandmother, Josie Ucas, was one of the initiates of Camp Number 1, which is Wrangell. She and Louise Bradley and Harriet's mother were very involved in getting the ANS started. They envisioned it as a right arm to the ANB, that they would raise the money that was needed in an organization, and they would start the meetings. So they had a strong start. The ANS, at that time I was in high school, and wasn't particularly interested in becoming active in an organization that hadn't yet been formed. But my grandpa said, he told my brother and I that whatever ability you have, you should use it to strengthen an A&B and ANS. And through his talks with us, I became convinced that I needed to get active. So I joined the ANS when I finished high school. I was the secretary, the first secretary, and my brother was a member, but he didn't take any office. But ANS is Camp Number 1 for their activity. Camp Number 2, is, I think it's the, was organized by a group of women that included the Lewis family and the Bradley family. Anyway, I understand that Wrangell still celebrates its anniversary, which is April 14th. That's when the hall was built, and they celebrated that by they celebrated themselves to recognize that it took a lot of work and a lot of dedication for them to achieve such a recognition. That camp was the only one organized by Native people, and they carried some of the programs that we utilized as Native people, and that's where you, it seems to me there's a little interest in ANS, but that Paulette is working really hard to get interest back in these organizations. It takes a lot of work. We have the land claims now that have organizations made up of people that are registered in the land claims. And it's very competitive because the land claims offers money, and the A&B and ANS was always a donation. The women would make jams and jellies and have a sale. Used clothing and household products were put on sale. And I know how much a quarter meant to them. They worked so hard, and they were so active.
You've talked a little bit about causes and programs that ANS has participated in or run, but do you have a favorite project or cause that you've worked on during your time with the Alaska Native Sisterhood?
I love the pauses and the change of chairs. It seemed to me that A&B and ANS had a real live sense of humor They were always making fun of ourselves. And they had a basketball team. And for the women, what was primary for them was looking after the old people, looking in on the people that were in the hospital, and go and visit them regularly so they wouldn't feel neglected. I'm in a pioneer home now, and I know the feeling of loneliness and abandonment. And then I have to stop and realize when I was working, I had little time also. I would say, well, I'll go and see Ann this weekend. And the weekend would come and I had errands to run, work to do, and the weekend was gone before I knew it. But now I really regret that because I know the loneliness since I'm now a resident there. And I have a lot of time to think. And one of my happiest days was spent with the ANS. I was going to write a series of stories that we used to have as kids. There were no electricity, I guess you call it. So you had to make up your games. And we played a lot of hide-and-seek games, jump rope games, marbles, and we'd have a lot of fun at it. The time would just go by. I remember running home from school, just anxious to get started with the kick the can game. I'd wear holes in the toes of my shoes. It's so different than it is now with the radioactive games or whatever they call them. At home, I spend most of my time sitting and reading books and thinking about old days. It's a real busy time. No, it's not busy. We have too much spare time holding our nursing home patients, holding them in one place. Now, that's something the ANS, at the start of their organization, would take that on. Of course, a number of people that would be in the hospital at that time would be smaller than it is now. But even so, I think about the ANS coming in and having the old used clothes would sell. I know my daughter, one thing she always remembered, I found a dress that just fit her at a garage sale. I thought it was real pretty. And I got it and washed it and cleaned it up and put it on her for Sunday school. And one of the girls who was a daughter of the mayor spotted her and said, look at Leah. She's got one of my old dresses. And she got a bunch of girls together to keep teasing Leah. But when it came recess time, the teacher was going to read to them a story. So they had two rows of little chairs in a semicircle around her, and she sat on the edge and read the story. But before that, she had to walk in and sit down on one of the chairs, and it just happened. Her chair was right in front of Leah. So when she went to sit down, Leah took the chair and pulled it. So she ended up sitting on the floor, and she got scolded. She had to stand in the corner for the rest of the school day. But she wasn't unhappy about that. She was just happy to send a message herself. And I worry about school today. They don't learn how to conduct yourself as a child and as a grown up.
So tell me then, what was your childhood like? What did you learn? What was town like? What were your friends like? What were your favorite bits?
I had a favorite time. My childhood was the happiest time of my life. In my neighborhood, my closest friend, Henrietta Hoyt, was a next-door neighbor, and we grew up together. I was very sad, almost devastated to learn of her passing away this past week. Death was not kept away from us like it is now. You go on a church or someplace to see somebody who's gone. In those days, there was no place to take them, to prepare them for a funeral. So they stayed at home, and home was really a home. Now people come and go, and kids travel to Hawaii. It's not the same kind of home that I remember, where you could play all day outside and fall down and cut your knee. And you go home and your grandma will put some Band-Aids on and comfort you. We had a lot of games. We made up games, especially with jump rope. And we were competitive. Sometimes we'd win a game, but nobody was mad about it. They just felt good that they were playing games together. Most of my fun times were in my childhood. We really celebrated Halloween. Even in school, we wore what we considered to be a fun and like a masquerade. And Christmas, I belong to the Episcopal Church, so they had services at midnight. But I went from the time I was 12 with my grandparents, and we went to the Christmas service. It really meant Christmas to me. We really believed in a child's birth. But when we went home after church, there were presents under the tree. And we couldn't wait until morning. So we'd open our presents at about 3 in the morning, just as tickled as could be. No, we didn't get great big things for our presents, like the needy electricity to run. They're very expensive. Electronic, and well, anyway, they never got expensive toys like that because they didn't have any expensive toys in the stores. Like Campbell Brothers used to carry those little red wagons that you pull, and anybody got one for Christmas was really lucky. We had moderate things like clothes to wear to school, slippers for home, things that you could use that took a lot of savings for our fishermen. All of my family, my father, my uncles, my brother, all were fishermen. So they had good seasons and they had bad seasons. It just depended how your Christmas would be. Sometimes they were pretty slim, and sometimes they were really nice. And we learned real young that you can't have Christmas every year, but that some years was going to be kind of slim. But for some reason, we accepted that. When I think about it now, I wondered how we did it, because kids always want toys, but we never whined about it. We made dolls out of rags. I still have one at home. And the boys made boats out of wood that was left over from the kitchen stove. And we would play boats, wading out in the water and pulling the boats by string. somehow we had a lot of fun out of that. I showed my grandsons and my son a bag of marbles I had saved for them. And I saved my best one, a good shooter, and a steely. And I brought them out, and they didn't know what to do with them. And when I showed them, they thought, that's not fun, to shoot a marble in a pool. And it occurred to me how different this generation, how they've been deprived of imagination and learned how to be thankful for what you got instead of whining for what you didn't get. They looked at Christmas as not a time of celebration. You might not remember the person we were celebrating, but we tried to explain it the best we could. It was a precious time to me, Sage. I looked forward to Christmas until I was about 12 or 13. Then I learned about how some people have a really big celebration, and there was something that they drank that made them dizzy. And it didn't look like fun, but they said they were having fun. We had a couple of Christmases like that. So I try to steer my children away from that. But they have drugs now. I guess what I'm always looking for is someone that knows how to raise your children, to be always looking for the good. We call it the good, but it's just life. Caring about people, trying to help them, respect for old people. I had my kids go up and help any old people they saw with bags of grocery, a package that might be heavy, and just say, can I help you? And take the bag away. There's many aspects of life. We try for the best one. But some of us, as we get older, are drawn to the excitement that looks like a lot of fun, but truly isn't. In my day, they had the girls go with their aunties in a home by themselves, the auntie and the young lady. And they spent 5 days together. And this is a true story. And it was the responsibility of the auntie to show the young lady all of the treasures and all of the requirements to be a good lady. So they learned. Nowadays, I see kids that look lost. They want to do the right thing, but they don't know how. And it's very simple once you learn it. I feel good when I see that happening. The boys went with uncles and spent time with them. But they learned about hunting and fishing and how to supply food for the family. And maybe that needs to be updated. But anyway, the world is different. The things we were taught may be out of tune. But it seems to me the basic things that our parents taught us was being good to each other. And don't make fun of somebody who's trying to do what is right. It's an exciting time this year. There's a lot of challenges, and there's a lot of good things. I think there's more good things than there are bad, but sometimes you have to look for it. or you have to try being good yourself, and you will draw people to your where you live, and they will talk to you and start a friendship. But even that is harder today. People travel all the time. So there's always somebody new. Whereas in my time, if they saw somebody new in town, the word quickly passed, and people were a little reluctant to go up and introduce themselves. But as children, they start playing. Before they know it, they were playing together. My favorite game was playing house. And we could take an old remnant of a tree that had been cut up and washed on shore. We would decorate that stump like, this is the kitchen, this is the bedroom. There would be cut places where we could transform them. It took a lot of imagination. But we would bake pies. We all had tin play toys, little tea saucers, and little cups, and a teapot. So we would take the plates and make a pie in it, a real fancy pie. We would decorate it with flowers. And we could play until it got dark in the wintertime. In the summertime, we would play past dark, but right on our porch. So as I talk about them now, it brings back happy memories, happy, happy memories. And I'm just glad I could remember most of it. And it started me to thinking, I wonder about your children. What brings you happiness now? I was real happy with a set of paper dolls, which you don't know about.
I actually had paper dolls.
Were they fun?
They were really wonderful.
When we ran out of paper dolls, we would use the Sears catalog and cut them out of there on the colored pages. I don't think you folks know the Sears catalog anymore. I don't think it's made. But if you're comfortable doing it, I would like to hear from you what makes you happy when you get out of school. What do you look forward to doing?
I think when I was a kid, my favorite thing was to be outside. I was a very bossy kid, and so I would appoint myself mayor or president or whatever leadership role the situation desired. And I loved being outside. We would make a town and make fake houses and fake rules, or we would have fights with the boys in the neighborhood and throw these, I think they might be chestnut, I am not entirely sure, but these spiky balls that would fall from the trees in the fall. And definitely my favorite thing was to be outside and kind of create imaginary worlds.